Good morning. We want to welcome you all to our second hearing in our January calendar, our second day, and wish you all a good new year. And we especially welcome Green Lake High School students. Would they please stand? Green Lake. Wow, big group. Coming. And we have students from Port Washington High School. Would they please stand? Thank you all for coming. And we also have students from Prairie School in Racine. Would they stand, please? Thank you again for coming. Students are here with a program cleverly entitled Court with Class. It's a program sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin and this court. We invite students from across the state to come and hear an oral argument. If the invitation is accepted, the students are sent materials about the case that they will hear with us. And at noon, after the second oral argument, a member of the court is assigned that day to meet with the students and discuss the procedures of the court in deciding the cases and in taking cases. The substantive issues of the cases are not discussed. We invite everybody to join the students and the justice in that discussion afternoon. Now, if anyone here would like a summary of the case we are about to hear, if you'd raise your hand, the marshal will give you a summary. It's easier to hear and understand the arguments if you have knowledge of the facts and the issues of the law. Anyone want a summary?
Yeah.
We do have some takers on the side. Thank you. While that's being done, let me introduce the members of the court to you all. On my far left is Justice Michael Gableman. Seated next to him is Justice Patience Robinson. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and to her right is Justice Prosser. The students will be meeting with Justice Prosser at the noon session. And on the far right is Justice Annette Ziegler. With those introductions made, I will now call the first case today, Racine County versus Oracle. How do you pronounce it? Oracular, Milwaukee, Inc. Arguing on behalf of Oracular is a counsel Jeffrey Aiken. Mr. Aiken.
If it please the court, I, together with my colleague Eric Meyer, represent the respondent petitioner Oracular in this matter. I'd like to start out by raising a very simple question that I think controls overall what this case is about. And that is a simple question of why does the law require expert testimony when there is an issue of such complexity that it is beyond the ordinary experience and lay comprehension of jurors? And we all know the answer. To avoid speculation. So the test is, if you have a matter that is going to require a jury to speculate in its fact findings, you need an expert. That is pervasive throughout our jurisprudence in this state. Now, I want to deal with the first issue, and that is that where you have two parties, where you have interdependent performance obligations, both of them have to perform certain things at certain times in order to get something done. The county knows that we are right, that a jury cannot say which party is at fault for not getting it done. without speculating unless you have an expert.
Well, let's just double back for a minute. I have a more simple question, and I want you to help me on just a procedural issue. We're not at the trial yet.
Correct.
We're at a summary judgment stage after a scheduling order, which probably says, tell me your expert witnesses, if any, right?
Correct.
All right. So why, I mean, assuming you're right, which you may or may not be, that an expert is needed, why are we making this decision at this stage, not closer to the trial? I mean, lots of things happen at trial. You might not need the expert for any number of reasons, because there's other testimony that takes care of it. Why is this a ground for summary judgment? That's what I don't understand. It's quite simple.
Let me try the best I can to explain it, Mr. Chief Justice.
I mean, you made the motion.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We have a Latin maxim.
You have a what?
A Latin maxim that basically
Latin
says...
Latin maxim. Got
yes.
It. Which one of
it
the many?
It basically says the necessity of proof always lies with the person who lays charges. That means that since the county was bringing the suit...
Trial counsel.
Pardon?
That's trial.
Well, in summary judgment, if we go back to 2004, Justice Sykes wrote a decision for this court in Beecher versus LIRC, where she cited the case of Kasuba from 1968, which was a summary judgment case, where she said, we characterize a prima facie case, which is the county's burden, as one established only when evidentiary facts are stated which resolve all factual issues in a party's favor, which, if remain uncontroverted by the opposing party's affidavits, are going to resolve all those facts. That was a summary judgment case.
Did you need an affidavit from an expert? Is that your position?
Excuse me?
Do you need an affidavit from an expert in a summary judgment matter? Is that your position?
You don't need an affidavit from an expert, but in order to establish a prima facie case, okay, prima facie case, that's what's being talked about at summary judgment.
No,
if you don't have an expert, Your Honor, how are you going to prove a prima facie case?
Summary judgment says there are no issues of material fact and only a question of law.
I agree.
So what you've got a lot of issues of material fact here. This is not an undisputed case, is it?
On Certainly
facts?
Not.
Of course not. So how can you have a summary judgment?
Because if you do not have an expert, you cannot go to trial and let the jury speculate as to outcome. The county is relying solely on the fact that results were not obtained in terms of getting a completed project. That's it.
That seems to me a good prima facie case on breach of
well,
contract.
Well, unfortunately, Your Honor, with all due respect, that requires speculation. It requires a jury, if they are given nothing more than those facts, it requires a jury to speculate that the county's personnel did everything they were supposed to do when they were supposed to do it in order to get the project done.
Counsel, I get your point. And we can now move on to the issues you really want to talk about.
Well, that's...
I get your point. Doesn't mean I agree with your point.
Okay.
All right.
Counsel, don't the allegations here run to allegations by the county that the company provided trainers that were not competent to the task and that certain deadlines were missed? And so to establish the prima facie case, the argument goes, no expert testimony would be required. The testimony of the employees of the county who received the allegedly incompetent training from the company's employees, coupled with the facts or the allegations, rather, concerning either the goal deadline, I know the term was changed from the up and running date to the goal for the deadline, Wouldn't the expert testimony, I assume opposing counsel might hypothecate, that it would be more appropriate to assign the burden of any necessary expert testimony as a defense to those allegations?
I don't believe that that is correct for several reasons, if I might explain. Number one, at least as far as I am aware, absent some kind of a statute, our jurisprudence in this state does not require a party to prove a negative. The burden of proof lies with the person making the claim. Let me give an example, if I may. Take an example of what is now prevalent today in the construction industry. That is fast-track building. In a fast-track project, the owner hires an architect and hires a contractor. The building starts being built as the architect is coming up with their plans. Let's assume building isn't done on time. The owner extends and extends and extends. It's still not done on time. And the owner fires the contractor because the fifth floor isn't put up and the roof isn't put up. Is the jury required to speculate if they are given just those facts? And I submit absolutely, because the jury has to speculate that the contractor got all of the plans when they needed them in order to get the project done on time, and the jury has to speculate that the contractor even got plans for the roof.
So, if I may, I speculate that the response to that argument from the opposing counsel would be along the lines of, no negative is being required to be proven, simply a defense as to how either the training, well, both, I suppose, the training was not, it was competent, so that's a positive, and that deadlines were not missed because they were merely expressed as a goal.
Let me try to go on a little further. And again, I want to go back to the analogy of a construction project. On a construction project, you have a lot of things that are supposed to take place at a certain point in time, and invariably they don't. Some tasks are critical to completion of the project. Other tasks are not. Other tasks are in the area of what we call float. That is, it doesn't really make any difference when it's done. It doesn't impact the overall performance of the project. Okay? A lot of times, things aren't done when they're supposed to be done for any number of reasons, and the dynamics of the project are such that things change. One cannot look at just an end result and say that one party or the other did what they were supposed to do when they were supposed to do it. If, again, I go back to my premise, the claimant has the burden of proof, and the burden of proof is to come in with evidence, credible evidence, that avoids speculation. Now, if this court wants to change our jurisprudence and say, no, we're going to cast the burden on a defendant to prove all that stuff, I suppose that's your prerogative. But in my judgment, you're going to set back jurisprudence in this country, and you're going to have a heck of an adverse impact on the construction industry.
Counselor, let me tell you what bothers me about your argument. I appreciate the cases you cite that require expert testimony. But in those cases, in my view, what the jury is being asked to judge is the quality of the work that was performed, not whether it was not concluded on a date agreed upon. To me, a date agreed upon is a fact. It's Monday, it's Tuesday, it's January 10th, it's March 15th. Quality is whether the work that was done with the standards required of the profession. And all the cases that have been cited to us deal with quality when you need an expert opinion, not a fact about which day something did occur upon or which day it did not occur upon. So that's my problem with your argument. Maybe you can address that for me and get me off that place.
Well, let me try my best, Your Honor. implicit in your question is the assumption that the setting of a date and the failure to achieve a date establishes prima facie breach.
If a date is in the contract, I agree with you. That's exactly what I believe.
Well, unfortunately, in this case, it wasn't time of the there was no time of the essence provision in the contract, but I'll avoid that for a second.
Okay.
Implicit in your question is an assumption that by not completing something on time, only one party failed to do what they were supposed to do. You are assuming that the other party did everything they were supposed to do when they were supposed to do
counselor.
It because you have a date and you're using that as a benchmark.
Counselor, let me disabuse you of that idea. Okay, if there were parts of participation required on both parties, and if the plaintiff sues your client and says you didn't timely do your part, there is a factual response from your client, I did, and the reason everything wasn't concluded is you didn't do your part. But that doesn't require an expert. If the county didn't do what they were supposed to do, you say they were obligated to, in your example, give me the plans by a certain date, and you didn't do it. That's just a fact question. It doesn't require expert.
Let me try to elaborate on that a little bit, if I may.
Okay, sure, of course.
This contract was a contract where we have these nebulous terms like oracular is to assist. Oracular is to work with. Oracular is to guide. And the county had project management oversight. They had the project manager. Okay? The date. Why doesn't the date establish that the county didn't do what it was supposed to do?
It may, but to me that's just a bunch of facts you give to the jury.
But you can't. How are you going to determine? How are you going to determine, Madam Justice, that oracular didn't assist properly or work with properly without an expert to tell you what they're supposed to do? The county's position in this case is, even if oracular did everything it was supposed to do, consistent with standard practice in the industry, it still has a claim for breach of contract. How do you come up with that?
Okay,
if they did everything they were supposed to do.
Is there somewhere in the record where Oracular points out failures on the part of the county?
In the record before this court, not that I am aware of, and that is because the issue that went up to the intermediate appellate courts, Court of Appeals, didn't involve that situation. There are matters in the file that are not part of the record, which relate to that. But unfortunately, I can't cite to them because we didn't prepare a record anticipating that we were going to be talking about this issue. We're talking about a different issue at the Court of Appeals.
What issue are you talking about?
The issue there was both parties stipulated, for all practical purposes, that Oracular was a professional, consistent with the holding back in micromanagers, and that to establish a liability for breach of contract of a professional, the basic rule is you need negligence. And the basic rule is if you need to prove negligence against a professional, you need an expert, unless it's open and obvious, like leaving a sponge in somebody's stomach. That's the issue that was presented at the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals obviously went off on its own and decided professional meant tort professional, as opposed to a business professional, a chemist, a plasma physicist, who are obviously all professionals. So the issue was never presented at that level in terms of what we're talking about here.
Well, the issue in got the Court of Appeals briefs here. Statement of the issue. Does the mere fact that a contract involves the provision of professional services necessitate and require expert testimony? And the counter statement was expert opinion evidence required to support Racine County's claim for breach of a professional software programming and consulting services agreement for failure to achieve desired results when the contract contained no express warranty or guarantee of results. Well, maybe you all have to go back to the trial court since you're up here on a what appears to be a different issue than the trial court gave summary judgment on.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
Why?
Because the trial court's decision, we obviously believe was the correct decision, and that is that the issue of who is supposed to do what in a project like this is so complicated that you need an expert to weed it out. We have issues of the county was responsible for report writing, custom menu creation, overall project management. Oracular was not responsible for any software-specific challenges, and the two parties were supposed to take care of things like network traffic modeling, team augmentation, implementation of baseline enterprise software. And the trial court said, you know, that is so complicated. Yes, the question that you ask is, did somebody breach a contract? Yeah, that's a simple yes or no. But the analysis that goes into making that decision is a very complicated one when you're dealing with things that, quite frankly, most of us over the age 18 don't know.
Counselor, you know, I look at the contract, and being an old commercial lawyer myself, I always start with the contract. What did the parties agree to? And you got a breach contract action against your client. And when I look at two, it says data conversions / migrations of all existing modules from PeopleSoft World to Enterprise One 8.0 shall be done by Oracula. Okay? The complaint, as I read it, and the briefs, as I read it, say it wasn't done. Now, why is whether it's done or not done not a fact question? Why do I need an expert to tell me if it was done or not done? It's been alleged it's not done. If your client can show it was done, then that claim will fail. But I really don't know why I need an expert to answer that question. I'm just reading what is the responsibility of Oracula out of the contract.
Oracula's responsibility under the contract was to assist, to guide and work with.
That's not what this provision. It says shall be done by Oracula.
The county provided the software. The county provided the hardware.
Right.
And in order for those tasks to be done, you have to get the software to the point where it could be done, just like training.
Sure. I agree with that. I'm not so...
Now, what am I missing, Madam Justice? Because
what you're missing is the allegation, which is a factual allegation in the complaint and in the briefs, that Oracula did not do the data conversions that the contract required. Okay? Now, if they've done it, then that claim fails. Or if you have a defense, we couldn't do it because you didn't give us the equipment we needed to have in order to do it, that claim fails. But those are just factual defenses that you don't need an expert for. You may win the lawsuit, but I don't see that it's there's no expert here.
Let me turn, if I may, to another provision of the contract.
Okay, go ahead. I got
the
contract.
And that is, we have a termination provision.
Yeah, everybody can terminate in 15 days. I saw that. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the county has admitted, its personnel have admitted, that as a result of that, they had no assurance or representation that any result would be accomplished within any specific period of time. None. Now, if that is the case, how do we now go back and say, you know, you didn't get this stuff done by this date, when we could have told you before we weren't happy with what you're doing. We could have paid under protest, and Oracle could have said, hey, wait a minute, guys. We're going to terminate.
But
And therefore, I can walk away from this contract without any liability whatsoever.
That may be the case, but I didn't notice in any of the pleadings, and I read the pleadings as well as the contract, that you ever terminated.
No, we did not.
Okay.
But the point is that when you look at the contractual structure, Madam Justice, the contractual structure was such that Oracular had no real responsibility for accomplishing anything as of any given point in time.
Oh, Counselor, you think they'd really pay you that many hundreds of thousands of dollars without any responsibility? I think there must have been some expectation there.
There's a difference between expectations, Your Honor. I can tell you, but I can't reach the client confidence. I am aware of a project where a company, in order to get a competitive advantage, tried to marry a Casetech system, CAN software, with a Siebel system. They spent tens of millions of dollars to try to do it. It couldn't be done. Gave up. Did they want it to be done? Yes. Was it done? No. So the idea that the parties wanted, of course they wanted it, or they wouldn't have undertaken it. But the question is, did Oracular have a contractual obligation to achieve results on this project when it was dependent, integrally dependent upon what the county did? And I submit they did not.
May I ask you a question? The original contract set a goal, as I understand it, of September 7th, 2004 as a go-live date.
Yes.
And that wasn't met.
Correct.
Okay. But that was a goal.
Right.
Doesn't the county represent that when that goal wasn't met, that Oracular basically said, well, we will get this done by this date? And then another thing, well, we're going to get it done by this date. No, we're going to get it done by this date. And so that there were specific dates offered of when the company represented they would be completed.
Yes. However, well, but you got to understand what goes on in a project like this, Your Honor. They can set a date because that's what they expect they're going to be able to do. But until you get into the middle of it, you don't know what you're going to run into. You have no idea. Now, it's like building something from scratch, building something to go to the moon. You don't know until you're in the middle of the project what the additional problems are going to be that throws that time schedule out the window. It happens every day in construction, every day. Where somebody says, yeah, I'm going to get it done by this time, but you know what? I discovered a problem with something, with the design, or there's questions. There's additional regulations, whatever it is. When you have process, you can't sit there and say something is an absolute when it's never been done before. You can give it your best shot.
Well, what was this contract for?
This contract was a time and material services contract.
Okay. And the end result of this time and service contract was?
The objective was to get a system in place. No question about it.
A system for what?
Pardon?
A system for what?
A system for the county that had three major modules or components to it.
Was
integrated.
It a payroll system?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So the goal was to get a payroll system that would be integrated for the units at issue. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, but I have a red light staring me in the face.
I have the same red light staring me in the face. So in light of that, you have five more minutes of rebuttal. You may be seated.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Well, representing Racine County.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. Excuse me. And Justices, it's my honor. My name is Jeff Level. May it please the Court, I'm here today from Racine, representing Racine County. Also with me is Associate Danielle Lutz and the County's Corporation Counsel, John Lehman. I have a prepared series of remarks, but in light of the questions and the presentation, I'd like to hone on just briefly a couple of key points here. One, I'm hearing in questions and response from Oracular that the deadlines, the go-live dates, and the calendar specified in the Gantt chart here were really not meaningful dates. They were subject to negotiation throughout the process, and that the movement through the process dictated a sort of fluid end date. I would suggest to the court that that is completely belied by the record, and I would point specifically to one example of how Racine County felt harmed by the deadline slide in this case. And for background, the Gantt chart showed that this thing was to be done by September 7, 2004, with everything finished by September 10, 2004. And yet, a year and a half later, as our appendix and our brief shows, 53% of the work contemplated by the Gantt chart was done. That's why this contract was terminated. And it was terminated because it did great harm to the county. And this specific example I want to point out to you is found at Record Document 26, page 7. This is a memo done almost at the end of the period of time contemplated by the Gantt chart. The finance director of Racine County, Doug Stancil, did a memo to Oracular after meeting with it and expressing concerns about delays and failures in training and progress. And this is after the original September 7 deadline had already been moved once. And in this memo, it's Exhibit A to his affidavit in the record, Mr. Stancil wrote, "Thank you for meeting with us on August 2, 2004. It was helpful to review with you the importance of the September 27th go-live date to Racine County. As we stated in the meeting, if the go-live date is missed, the implementation of the HR payroll system would be delayed until spring due to the increased workload at year end. This would cause the county to pay for an additional year of maintenance on the infinitum system and would require our staff unanticipated work on the infinitum system. The delay here caused the county significant money damage in that it missed being able to use this system on its payroll and its year-end budgeting calculations."
Counsel?
And, yes.
We're not at the damages stage yet.
I understand.
We're at summary judgment. And my question is, why should you have summary judgment on expert testimony at all?
And I think it's an excellent question, Your Honor. There were disputed facts here under Section 80208. This was not a hard case. I have great respect for Judge Simonic. I don't know how this happened. The factual issues, the disputes were clearly drawn. The failure of training and the missed deadlines were not expert issues. This really comes down to a decision about enforcing a scheduling order in some ways and whether someone has disclosed an expert timely. And an expert wasn't necessary for this. So an expert should not have been required. Summary judgment shouldn't have been granted. There are disputed material facts on simple non-expert issues like timeliness of completion and sufficiency of training. And further, expert testimony was not necessary on sufficiency of training because there are admissions in the record by affidavit. Several witnesses, Marta Kulchin's affidavit is an excellent example. This is Record Document 22. There's also a document, an affidavit, I believe Record 25, of Ms. Kelly, talking about Oracular staff admitting to Racine County personnel that Oracular had staffed the system for failure, that the staff Oracular had supplied was insufficient, didn't have the knowledge of this system to train Racine County's employees. And then the record's clear that Racine County had to go out and hire someone in the marketplace to do the training, cover, if you will, in old UCC terms, for the failure of the training here.
Why do we get to training when the system isn't finished?
I think there are training about data integration issues that related to how to convert the data that was in the infinitum system into usable bits of information in the existing system.
As this process was proceeding, not at the end of use of the process.
Correct, Your Honor, correct. Have I answered your question about summary judgment?
You have cited affidavits. You have offered affidavits suggesting that time was critical here. Is there anything in the record from the other side saying, hey, Racine County, you are obstructing or making our process more difficult by failure to cooperate? I mean, are they going to be able to come up with a paper record here of you're not doing your part in this bilateral arrangement?
Justice Prosser, I do not believe that exists in the record to date, and I don't think it will exist on the record in the future if we are lucky enough to be remanded.
So I'm going to let Mr. Aiken comment on this again, but are we supposed to just kind of speculate that they're going to have some sort of defense against your non-cooperation? Based on your non-cooperation?
I think that's what they want you to do, frankly. I mean, their argument is that we didn't cooperate and that caused delays, and an expert is necessary to basically explain the cause of the delays and the failure of the system to be implemented timely. The cases we've cited to you from around the country reject that proposition that an expert is necessary to show causation for computer software installation failure when the failure is evident as a fact matter. And I think they are asking you to speculate that they'll be able to muster that proof and that somehow we had to, as a part of our prima facie case, bring that expert proof to the trial, or to the motion here, essentially.
It seems to me the issue here, as I understand it, is that the court said the county was absolutely required to give a signal of its expert witnesses or expert reports in order to go forward as a matter of law. Are you saying that you would never have to have experts here, even in the face of experts from the other side? You're not arguing that they couldn't have experts?
Certainly not. A couple of answers, if I may, Justice Prosser. One, it has never been the county's position that Racular was precluded from using experts to establish either an affirmative defense or to attack our prima facie case. Second, it's never been Racine County's position that we would never foresee a need for experts on a case like this. But third, it was our position on the summary judgment motion that central disputed fact issues about things like sufficiency of the trainers provided and the time for completion precluded summary judgment here without an expert, and that no expert was necessary to make that kind of presentation. And I would hearken to Justice Rogensack's question, which I thought was really to the point here about professional malpractice cases involving jury inquiry into quality of care, because it echoed what this court said in Hoven, that doctors don't contract for cures. But computer consultants contract and Gantt chart it for a time of completion. And my suspicion is that we would have a horrific computer consultant marketplace if every consultant could hide underneath Hoven and say, well, we don't contract for completion or cures. We just contract to do our best and exercise the quality of care expected in the practice. We can't promise the deadline. We can't promise your payroll system will work. But we can promise we'll exercise the quality of care expected of professionals in our realm of practice to try and get it done for you. That's a central contrast between a medical malpractice case and an attorney malpractice case, where the focus is on the quality or another way of saying it, I would submit.
Counsel, I think that begs the question, what are the elements, in your estimation, what are the elements that the county has to establish for a prima facie case here?
That there was an agreement expressed in the contract reflecting the expectation of the parties that wasn't met. Here, for example, that training would occur, or that the project would meet the deadline set in the Gantt chart. And then, after that, damages, foreseeable contract damages resulting from the failure to meet.
And I was asking your opposing counsel at the beginning of his presentation questions based on what I, so to speak, speculated you would be arguing. And I assume, or I infer from what you're saying, that your position would be once the county, if it can, establish those prima facie elements, that the burden would then shift if there are any affirmative defenses. And then that's where, at least in the trial court's, from what I could read, what I could understand from the trial court's opinion, that's where we start to get more into the jargon and the specific responsibilities. And you asked the question rhetorically, I don't understand how this happened. It seemed to me the trial court focused on the highly technical, detailed jargon that's presented by many of these computer issues. And I suppose that might be where the jury would get into those technical issues.
And it might be that in attacking our prima facie case, Oracular would offer up expert opinions about how some structure or code in the computer made its meeting the Gantt chart impossible. Maybe the data...
Because of the failure of the county, I suppose, to put the code in or something.
Right, or to have data in a digestible fashion ready for importing into the new system or something like that, and that might partake of expert inquiry. But at the stage that this was at summary judgment, where we were able to show disputed material fact on non-expert issues, it should not have been granted. And this case should have proceeded, as Chief Justice Abramson sort of implied, if I might say, to a date much closer to trial, when a lot more discovery had been done, a lot more issues had been crystallized, and perhaps even when parties were thinking about jury instructions and verdict forms so that we could really hone in on the factual inquiry you would be submitting to the jury in this case. But this action ended a lot more quickly.
No, Mr. Aiken implied, and I hope I'm not misquoting him, but he can correct us, that you all agreed that the issue was that this is professional services, and that you all agreed that that raised the tort issue, for simplification, the tort issue of malpractice quality rather than a contract issue. Now, I wasn't at the trial, at these proceedings. You didn't represent Racine County, did you?
Not at the trial court level, Your Honor, correct, nor at the Court of Appeals level.
No, that's what I thought. Did you all agree that's the issue that goes up? I don't know that it's binding on you or on us, but just what is it you all thought you were doing in the Court of Appeals?
From my review of the briefs and the decision, it is my belief that the issue that went up was basically, did we have to come to a summary judgment hearing with an expert to prove our prima facie case? And then when it went up on appeal, the Court of Appeals decision did go on at some length about the appropriate criteria for identifying a professional. I don't believe, candidly, that that was the issue that went up to the Court of Appeals. And I noticed in comparable fashion, the petition for review cited three issues, and only one of them ultimately gets addressed in Oracular's reply brief. I think there were some issues presented in the petition that were effectively abandoned by the petitioner, those being the professional status of a computer consultant and the appropriate criteria for determining professional status.
Well, that's one. That was number two. The first issue was, is expert testimony required to prove a branch of contract claim based on timely completion delay when a contract involves complex interdependent bilateral performance?
And I think that issue, so to speak, is what really drove the circuit court decision and led to the appeal to the Court of Appeals. But as we've argued in our brief, we believe that that is that issue is freighted with issues of nomenclature. Every enforceable contract is bilateral. I agree to sell something, the other party agrees to pay me for it. That's bilateral. Generally, unilateral contracts are not enforceable. And complex performance doesn't require an expert unless the jury is going to be asked to look at something that is so extraordinary it's beyond its ability to gauge the conduct of the parties. And that wasn't at issue in this case. I initially reviewed the petition for review and the issues presented and thought perhaps what brought us here was whether or not the court would be recognizing a malpractice cause of action for computer consultant negligence. But a careful review of the record, I believe, candidly, suggests that's not at all what's presented to you here. Because we know in professional malpractice cases, experts aren't always needed. And we've cited the cases in our brief, for example, Olfi versus Gordon, an attorney malpractice case, no expert was needed to prove it there. In Kramer versus Theta Clark, no expert was needed there to explain a nurse's negligence. This is not a computer malpractice case, really, at its bare bones. It's an issue of what's necessary for a contract plaintiff to prove a prima facie case, considered at an early summary judgment stage. And the circuit court required the county to come armed with an expert and should not have, given the material facts in dispute in the record here.
Could I ask, could the county have filed this suit, say, October 1st, 2004, for breach of contract?
I believe so.
But the date of September 7th, 2004 was a goal, wasn't it?
It was expressed in various ways. It was expressed as a go live goal. It was September 7th was stated in the Gantt chart as the date that all of the installation would be done. The response or the proposal of Oracular to the RFP said we'll get this done on time. Everyone was perfectly clear about intending it to be done then, and if there was any clarity lacking, Mr. Stansel's memo in August.
When was that Gantt chart submitted to the county?
That was a part of the proposal of Oracular that was submitted before the contract was even signed, so it would have been before February of 2004.
It would have been probably in December of 2003.
I believe that's correct.
I mean, did the whole thing get started later than everybody expected?
The whole thing gets started?
Yeah.
Later than expected?
Wasn't there the final meeting of the minds in February 2004 when people had expected it to start earlier?
Well, I know that the contract was signed February 2nd, 2004, and it incorporated the pre-existing RFP and the proposal. They were all blended, essentially, as one contract document. I don't feel like I'm answering your question, though.
The question, it seems to me, is that it's one thing today to say September 7th, 2004, that's the date that we're going to go live. That's the deadline here. But when they change that to a goal, that's a little bit shakier. When the whole thing gets started later than was originally anticipated, that kind of raises some questions. What I'm really adding up to, if you're not able to establish that a specific date is when the contract should have been met, does it take experts to determine when there was a breach of the contract?
No, and I say that for a couple of different reasons, Justice Prosser. One, assume for argument's sake that calling it a goal injected some ambiguity. If that's true, that ambiguity was eliminated when Doug Stansel, the finance director, met with Oracular after having already moved the goal deadline once and explained the damage that was going to happen to the county if it wasn't done by year's end, and expressly stated the importance of the September 27th go-live date to Racine County. Now, we know from the briefing in the case law that if there's any ambiguity in the contract, the best source to clear it up is the conduct of the parties. The conduct couldn't be any clearer here. If Oracular had any doubts about the meaningfulness of the deadline, they were gone after this meeting. And he confirmed it in writing because he explained to him the problem, the expense that would come to the county if it didn't get done by the newly revised deadline. Now, secondly, to answer the question about experts, if I could.
If two parties have an ambiguous contract, you're saying that one party can say somewhere after the contract is signed, you know, that sort of goal date, I want that to be a firm date. And that makes it a firm date?
When the parties have met and agreed on it, Mr. Stancil met with Oracular and Oracular promised to get it done. So it was not Mr. Stancil unilaterally imposing. It was him memorializing in a meeting he had with Oracular where Oracular said, we can get it done. We will get it done, and we can live with this new date, September 27th. So I think that does eliminate any ambiguity. If one accepts that there's ambiguity, and I don't, they submitted a Gantt chart that showed an endpoint. And that's pretty clear,
but,
I think.
But your position would be this is a fact question anyway, isn't it?
Right, and no expert should ever be allowed, and we cite Kreklo for this proposition. You may remember the Kreklo case. This court held that when the fact issue is where's the middle of the road, you don't need an engineer to tell a jury that. I don't think you need an expert in this case to clarify go-live deadlines. Or part of Oracular's argument is there might be some industry custom involved here that would require expert testimony to establish when computer consultants, how they view deadlines. This court shouldn't countenance that argument. That would allow experts to totally muddy up contractual deadlines. There isn't an expert issue there on a deadline on the contract, and no industry custom should be allowed to wipe away what the parties have agreed to, A, in contract documents, and then B, in meetings held afterwards to clarify.
Is it your position that if this matter would go to trial, that Oracular would be prohibited from calling any expert witnesses?
No, not at all.
Did they list expert witnesses?
I believe they did, and yes, I'm being told yes.
Counsel, I've got a question in terms of what actually went on at the summary judgment hearing. My understanding is that ultimately this came down to whether or not Racine County should have named an expert. What did Racine County present to the circuit judge in terms of the issue of expert? Was there an affidavit saying we don't need an expert and here's why? Or what was presented? How did you establish genuine issues of material fact on that point?
There were five affidavits, perhaps more, submitted by management officials in Racine County that explained the missed deadlines and how it was hampering their ability to do the computer, to do the missed deadlines and how the software change had not occurred and how training was not happening.
Tell me how that relates to the narrow issue of whether or not you should have named an expert.
Because those affidavits drew factual disputes on material issues on contract performance such that an expert was not necessary. And the legal argument was made by the county's counsel that those factual issues were not the kind of issues that needed an expert to have an explanation for the jury.
That was presented in argument. Was it presented at all in an opposing affidavit?
By way of affidavit? I can't say that I can point to an affidavit from an employee of the county or a lawyer that said, this is not an expert issue, but I would submit to you that that's an issue of law. We know from the Trinity Lutheran case, the standard of review for this is de novo. You determine as a matter of law whether an expert is needed to explain an unusually esoteric issue to a jury. So I don't know that an affidavit from a party or from a party's lawyer would illuminate that inquiry. I would submit it would not.
So you think that based on Trinity Lutheran that all you needed here to oppose the motion for summary judgment was argument?
Well, that and affidavits drawing material disputed facts on contract breach, which were supplied multifold to the circuit court here. Sense a question, or should I continue?
Well, I was going to ask you if you had material issues of fact, genuine issues of material fact, I guess is the phrase. And everybody says, yeah, there's a dispute about the fact. Couldn't you get summary judgment anyway? Because regardless of what the facts are, plaintiff's side or defendant's side, the issue of law is clear.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's, I think, another way of stating Justice Crooks's question. The material issues of disputed, the issues of genuine issues of material fact that are in dispute. Was there a contract fixed date for completion? Did Racine County do its job under the contract? But regardless of how you rule on those, whether which facts you accept, the question might still be that you need expert witnesses, that the Racine County needs an expert witness.
You mean down the road in the case upon remand?
Well, you see, that was my original question, and this is not down the road. This is the beginning of the road.
Right.
Of summary judgment. So, can you have summary judgment even if you have disputed facts?
I don't believe you can. I think the statute compels a denial of such a motion.
Okay.
It might be down the road in the case, past the point, way past the point we are now, where a discovery occurred of defendants' experts and they raised complex issues that were incomprehensible to the ordinary juror. The county might be in a position where it sought amendment of the scheduling order to ask for a rebuttal expert opportunity to rebut these unusually esoteric issues. But we never got to that point in this case. And the court's familiar. It's not uncommon that outside of the realm of the ordinary personal injury case, without complex issues, there are rebuttal opportunities for plaintiff to disclose an expert in response to a defense expert. That might have occurred here if those kinds of issues had been posed by an affirmative defense or by an attack on our prima facie case that had been mustered by the defense with an expert. But we never ever got to that stage in this case. And I believe the circuit court looked at computers and computer lingo, if you will, as a fairly new and complex matter and concluded that an expert was necessary when it really wasn't, given the disputed facts that had been raised by the affidavits of the county personnel. So I would note that the Court of Appeals decision on this issue is in good company with many of the cases around the country that we have cited in our brief that show that the failure to meet the contractual terms by a computer consultant is not a negligence kind of thing that requires expert testimony to support it. And interestingly, too, I think that the decisions we've cited are not particularly new decisions. Some of them are 20 years old, where the District Court of New Jersey in Hospital Computer upon New York law said no expert's necessary for this. Chatlos, the New Jersey law case, holds the same way, and so does later the New York Court of Appeals.
Are they summary judgment cases or trial cases?
My recollection is that they might be trial cases upon review of record sufficiency and not summary judgment cases. And I would submit that if my recollection of them is accurate, that's quite telling, that it would be exceptionally rare that a case would be kicked at this stage because the plaintiff didn't have an expert to prove that kind of issue. I don't believe the cases are looking at it from the summary judgment stage and effectively reviewing the imposition of the death penalty on a plaintiff for not having an expert on a non-expert issue. I see that my red light is...
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it greatly.
Thank you, Mr. LaBelle. Mr. Aiken.
A couple of quick points. In response to your questions, Justice Prosser, the, quote, go-live date was extended 4 different times on this project.
What about that record 26, page 7 letter that your opposing counsel keeps on referring to that confirmed a September 27th deadline?
I don't have that, Your Honor, and I don't have it committed to memory. All I know is that I believe the project was extended past that time. So what was supposedly a live-or-die date, apparently it wasn't.
Well, but can't the parties agree to amend the contract?
Sure they can.
Sure.
Of course
they
can. They? But it doesn't necessarily turn it into a time-of-the-essence date, Your Honor.
But it might turn it into a fixed date.
Well, yeah, they have a go-live date. Every project has a go-live date. Just like building a building, you have a date when you want to move into the building. If I can respond to one of the questions you raised, Madam Chief Justice, at the Court of Appeals, the issue as framed by the county was, does the mere fact that a contract involves the provision of, quote, professional services, so we were talking professional services at that point. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. Let me get to the main point. And this goes to the question of, is summary judgment an appropriate stage in which to require an expert? Your primary question. And I'm going to say, if we look at the big picture, we look at legal mal, med mal, all of the malpractice cases, and we say we need experts, except for rare cases, because of the complexity of what's involved. You can't, a former client can't walk into court and say, Aiken, you lost my case, therefore I get to go to the jury. Can't do that. Why? Because what I do as a lawyer is complicated. There's judgments that go on. There's things that change throughout time.
It's the statute of limitations. The lawyer, you might not need an expert witness.
Well, that's right. But the same complexity, Your Honor, that is inherent in other activities besides being a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer. And if you can say that you take other areas that are very, very complicated and you don't need experts and just let it go to the jury, why? Why is there a difference? And that's what troubles me. In our medical mal or legal malpractice case, when we have a sponge in the stomach, we are in effect saying this is res ipsa. It has to be a breach of contract. It has to be negligence on its face. Just because a project isn't done on time is not a but-for analysis of res ipsa, which is exactly what the county wants. They want to say, we don't need an expert. We, in effect, get a res ipsa instruction that gets us to a jury, and we throw it all against the wall and see what the jury will buy. I don't believe that's the law, or should be the law. And I also believe there is a difference. There's a major difference in that what the county is portraying is, if we had total control over the whole project, and the county just said, Oracular, you come in and you take over the whole thing, we'll have nothing to do with it. If we don't get it done and we don't get it done right, I agree they don't need an expert. But that wasn't the contract. As a matter of fact, there was some training done. There was training done. If you read the contract says we will assist in training. It doesn't say we're solely responsible for having all the training done. Don't we need an expert to say what should or shouldn't Oracular have done? I believe yes. Finally, this idea of Gantt charts, If anybody knows anything about use of Gantt charts, they're used every day in construction. They're modified constantly, constantly. A Gantt chart does not create a time of the essence. It is a goal. It's what the parties strive to do, period. And if something is going to be a drop-dead date, you get it done by this date or not, what happens? People impose liquidated damages. They have a specific provision in the contract as to what happens if you don't get it done on time. None of that is here. The reason it's not here is I go back to the provision that they could have terminated any time they wanted to and walked away. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Aiken. And thank you, Mr. Lavelle, for your arguments today on what is a very interesting summary judgment case in a novel close, I would think. And that concludes 07AP2861, Racine County versus Oraculum, Milwaukee, Inc. Now, I have two, maybe three comments. One, I recognize Senator Brockman is here. It's an open courthouse room, so you're welcome, counsel. Thank you. Do you want to state your purpose? No. Okay, and that's okay, too. This was just a good opportunity. We do welcome you, sir. We will recess and the students may leave. The court will not come back until after 11, because at 11 on today, Wednesday, the first Wednesday of the month, the alarm system in this building is tested. It's quite noisy, so it is just a testing. You need not evacuate the building unless you want to leave for other reasons. And so we will take a recess. You all may leave. The other students may come in when they wish. And we'll be back after the noise abates. We are in recess. That's right.